Protesters took to Syria's streets in 2011 to demonstrate against what they called the repressive regime of President Bashar al-Assad. Wendy Perlman says Assad responded to the peaceful protest with violence, which led to the ongoing civil war that's displaced millions of Syrians within the country's borders, in addition to the many who fled. Perlman teaches political science at Northwestern University, and she's been studying Middle East politics since the mid-1990s. Perlman has interviewed more than 300 Syrian refugees during the past 5 years. Some of their stories are included in her new book, We Crossed a Bridge and It Trembled.
It was very important to me that the title be taken from the words of Syrians themselves, that it come from one of the testimonials. So there's a testimonial of a doctor from the suburbs and outskirts of Damascus describing a really massive protest in April 2011. And literally there was a huge crowd and they crossed a bridge. And he said, literally his words, you know, word for word, we crossed a bridge and it trembled under the weight of so many people. So that title was really meaningful for me because it was a memory of the very optimistic, almost euphoric days of many Syrians who felt like they'd never even been able to speak about politics. They never imagined criticizing the regime. They lived under a regime that was in many ways corrupt and brutal, where there was no rule of law, there was no accountability, there were no political freedoms, you couldn't form a political party, you couldn't write something in the newspaper, you couldn't even speak freely. There was a single ruling party, and those in power could basically do whatever they want and throw anybody in prison and torture them and they disappear and so forth. That was the reality in Syria for decades. So when Syrians went out into the streets, many said that they experienced protesting like the first time they ever breathed or the first time they ever heard their own voice.
So Syrians felt euphoric at the beginning of this 5 or 6 years ago. Yes. What about some of the people you talk to today? What are their feelings now?
There's a tremendous amount of despair. And when I was doing these interviews, I saw hints of that even as early as 2012, and then it became, you know, sort of thickly apparent to me even by 2013. So you can imagine now, 4 years later, 2017, the kind of despair. There are really, I think, layers of pain that people who've lost loved ones, and most people have in one way or another, whether it's someone in their immediate family, a friend, a colleague, a cousin, someone in the neighborhood. I think it's probably few the Syrians who can say that no one close to them has perished at this point. So the sheer loss of life, in addition to those who are mourned, those who've been killed, there's also this horrific issue about Syrians who've been disappeared, that many have been arrested and never heard from again. That's just almost the tip of the iceberg for what people experienced inside Syria. And then I often find with refugees with whom I've talked that then there are other layers of trauma. There's the trauma of journeying out of Syria. It could be a very dangerous journey to get out of Syria in the first place. Then for those who moved on from the Middle East to Europe, that journey over the Mediterranean, where many people have drowned in these, you know, rubber dinghies and so forth, could also be traumatic. And then when people arrived in Europe, often walked for weeks and weeks, a month or so, through the Balkans and slept on the street and, you know, navigated their way around mafias or people trying to exploit them along the way and so forth. That journey itself was traumatic. And then there's the sort of last trauma of which I find people are in this stage now, of finally arriving wherever they've arrived and trying to make new lives as refugees.
Do you get a sense from many of the people you've talked to that they would like to return to Syria someday, or now that they've left the country, have they decided to make their lives elsewhere?
I think it really varies. And I think for many of the people with whom I speak, and the overwhelming majority are people who identify as being opposed to the Assad regime, that they supported and maybe participated in the uprising against him. They see that regime as brutal, as authoritarian, as criminal. For those folks, they can't imagine going back to live in Syria as long as the Assad regime is still in power. So it's not just a matter of if conflict ends, can they go back? but they can't imagine to go back and live under the same regime, chiefly because they have no assurances that they'll be safe. So that's the difficulty. I think that many people would love nothing more than to go back to Syria. They speak about it with such love and fondness about the country, the community, the social life, the landscapes, how beautiful it was, you know, how tasty the fruit was. People love their homes and would love nothing more than to go back. But most of the people that I've spoken to want to go back to a free Syria and can't go imagine going back to a Syria that's still unfree.
Wendy Perelman is author of We Crossed a Bridge and It Trembled. It tells the story of Syrian refugees in their own words. Perelman says many Syrian refugees won't return home if Bashar al-Assad remains in power, even if their current situation leaves them in limbo. And she says American President Donald Trump's proposed travel restrictions on Syrian refugees are like adding insult to injury. Rich Egger reporting.